Hello and welcome to another episode of the County Cricket Podcast in association with our friends at Bear Cricket. I'm your host, Aaron, aka the Cricket Connoisseur, and on my left, as always, is my Lancastrian co-host, Joe Nutsy, Nuttall. So Joe, mate, how's your day been so far?
It's all right, thank you. Obviously, just, well, half an hour into day five of the test at the moment. So, yeah, England have got the big wicket of Pant. It's a very good test match, isn't it? This is one of the better we've seen in England for a while, I would say. So, yeah, 180 runs, India are currently ahead this very moment. So, yeah, this is a very, very good test match. It's going to be very close.
100%, Joe. What do you think the final result will be? Out of interest?
Depends. Depends how England bat. I mean, that's a pretty obvious thing to say, but if England end up either just blocking out for, I don't know when they're going to bowl India out. Let's say they bowl India out before lunch and then say they need 200 to win, for example. If England block out like they normally do at the top of the order, they're not going to win. Then there's no chance of winning. So, yeah, if England play like that, then there's no chance. But if they score quickly with intent, I don't see any reason why they can't. The pitch isn't really like, I don't really think it's changed much. So we got a little bit slow, but it's not really changed very much at all. So, yeah, I think if England back with intent, I think they can win. Also, if Root ends up coming to the crease, he'll win. That's pretty much a given.
Yeah, he was absolutely sensational, wasn't he? 189 yeah. out. Yeah. Absolutely brilliant. And yeah, Joe, we'll have to find out how that game does pan out. I'm going to go with a draw. I'll go with a draw. I think it's going to be heading into the third test. But as you said, we'll have to wait and see. But Joe, we aren't here to talk about the test match, are we?
We're not.
Because this is, of course, our weekly Royal London One Day Cup wrap-up show. Our third of four, Joe. I mean, to think that it comes to an end on Thursday this week at Trent Bridge, it's gone very, very quickly, hasn't it, mate?
Yeah, it has. It's been obviously a good tournament so far. You know, obviously the biggest county names and some of the international names aren't there with the 100. But I think, you know, for those youngsters who've been given a chance, I think they've stepped up really, really well. So, yeah, it's been a good tournament so far. It really has.
100%. I've absolutely loved it. Went to a load of Warwickshire matches, was at the Oval, actually, funny enough, last week, watching a certain batting masterclass from a Singaporean batsman who we'll discuss at length in today's podcast. But yeah, Joe, I mean, to think that the group stage has come to an end, we've had the playoffs as well, and the Royal London One Day Cup will be decided at Trent Bridge on Thursday. Very, very exciting times indeed. And of course, we will be covering that on, well, next week's wrap-up show as our concluding episode of the RLODC wrap-up series. But Joe, before we get into our analysis and our discussion about this week's games, we do, of course, have the tables and the results from those playoff matches. So just for the listeners out there, Group 1 finished like this. Glamorgan finished at the top of the table on 10 points. In second was Surrey. They had a really, really fantastic finish to their campaign. They also finished on 10 points. In third were Yorkshire, funnily enough, also on 10 points, but with a slightly inferior net run rate to the likes of Surrey and Glamorgan. In fourth, agonisingly close were Leicestershire on 9 points. They were 1 point off reaching the playoffs. They had a fantastic campaign, did the Foxes. In fifth were my county of Warwickshire. We finished on 8 points with a minus 0.25 net run rate, but again, a decent campaign for the Bear and Ragged staff, given all of the omissions and absentees. In sixth were Notts on 8 points. In seventh were Somerset on 8 points as well. In eighth, a Northamptonshire on 6 points. And finishing bottom of Group 1 with Derbyshire on 3 points. Now, Group 2, the final standings were as follows. Durham finished top of the group, winning 6 of their 7 games. Absolutely outstanding. They had a no result as well. They finished on 13 points. Absolutely dominated Group 2. In second were Essex. They finished on 11 points. In third were Gloucestershire on 8 points, but the key thing here was that they had obviously that abandonment against Middlesex. So as a result of that, they actually finished in third above fourth place Lancs, who finished on 9 points. In fifth were Worcestershire on 7 points. In sixth were Hampshire also on 7 points. In seventh were Sussex on 6 points. In eighth were Middlesex on 5 points. And bottom of group two were Kent on 4 points. So as a result of these final standings, we had a playoff scenario as follows. So our first quarter final or playoff no matter what you want to call it, was Essex versus Yorkshire at the County Ground in Chelmsford. The Eagles emerged victorious in that by a convincing margin of 129 runs. So they face Glamorgan in today's semi-final at Sophia Gardens. And in the second and final playoff match, we saw Gloucestershire take on Surrey at the Oval. And Surrey won that encounter by 5 wickets to secure their place in Tuesday's semi-final against Durham up at the Riverside. So some very, very interesting results in this week's games. And of course, we'll be here to talk you through the key performances and standout moments from each of the groups. So as always, I'll start with Group 1. And when it comes to standout batting displays, Joe, there is only one place I can start. And that is, of course, with Tim David. At the Oval, I alluded to it right at the start of the show, this was an absolute masterclass in white ball batting. 140 not out from just 70 balls. It was absolutely brutal. He hit so many sixes. He scored 9 fours, 11 sixes, got his career best list day score. And as if that wasn't enough, he also scored a century yesterday to help take Surrey through to the semi-finals. Tim David really is a man in scintillating form. He's producing with the bat, the ball, in the field as well. Joe, just how impressed have you been with Tim David's output in this last week or so for the Brown Caps?
Yeah, Tim David's always been ever since I first seen him play, I think he's been a really, really good player. You know, he's kind of one of those players who's not the most glamorous cricketer. You know, he's not necessarily got the nicest technique, for example. But he's so effective, isn't he? He's such a good player. And yeah, I mean, he's done it for the Hurricanes, obviously in the BBL as well. He was brilliant in the BBL and now he's doing it, you know, in 50 over cricket for Surrey. So yeah, I think obviously hard luck to Warwick, obviously conceding the 100 against him. And obviously Gloucester yesterday, which would have been Lancs if Lancs had gone through. But yeah, it's a really, really impressive showing. That's what you want from an overseas player. Of course, that's what you want. And as I say, he's not got a nice technique, but I mean, he's not got like a perfect technique. You know, you think of the likes of Babar Azam and Virat Kohli, who do it whilst looking so, so good. But yeah, Tim David is so, so effective and he scores really, really good runs. And he's also a great fielder as well, I will add, because he's so tall and it's so beneficial in the field, long on, for example. So yeah, Tim David, I think what an effort from him to score, well, back-to-back hundreds. In knockout cricket as well, which is effectively what the last two games have been for Surrey. You know, really, really impressive.
Well, he has been, Joe. And some of the shots that he was producing against Warwickshire were absolutely ludicrous. I think it was off the bowling of Craig Miles. He hit him into the second tier of the pavilion. It was a ludicrous shot. So much class, so much elegance. It really was a breathtaking shot, I must admit. And obviously, I was there supporting Warwickshire, but I do appreciate good cricket. And this was an outstanding display of white ball batting, courtesy of the Singaporean batsman. So, Tim David, take a bow. He's been in absolutely scintillating form, had a fantastic finish to the campaign. And funnily enough, before that actual game against Warwickshire, I believe his best score in the competition this season was around about 15 or 16. So, a massive, massive
found
step
his form.
Up. Exactly, at the right time. As of Surrey, to be fair, and I'll discuss that in due course, but Tim David, by far the best knock of the week, I think, across either group. You could maybe argue a certain Durham player also did have a sensational batting display in one of the earlier games, but 140 not out from 70 balls when Surrey had their backs against the wall, needed a victory to get themselves into the playoffs. Oh, it's one of the standout knocks of the tournament for me. So Tim David is my first batting display of the week. In terms of my second one, Joe, again, this is a slight bit of a cop-out. Because like last week's show, I've gone for two. I just could not separate these two knocks. So I've gone first of all for George Bartlett's 108. And then I've gone for Lewis Hill's 107. Both of these came in the same game. Leicestershire versus Somerset at the Cooper Associates County Ground in Taunton. Now these were brilliant for different reasons. Now George Bartlett's 108 came from 89 balls. He hit 4 boundaries and 8 sixes on his way to reaching the mark. And Lewis Hill on the other hand was a lot more measured. I'd say a lot more composed, a lot more assured, a lot more patient with regards to his approach. His 107 came from 106 balls. But the key thing there was that he laid anchor for the Foxes absolutely superbly. This was a match-winning performance from Lewis Hill. 7 fours, 2 sixes, rotated the strike absolutely brilliantly. And that allowed the likes of Louis Kimber, for example, to come in and hit a blistering 85 from 57 balls. So this game of cricket, two excellent knocks for completely different reasons, but both showed the sheer class of the respective batsmen. And I thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed not just the knocks themselves, but the game. It was an absolute thriller. We saw over 650 runs scored in this game. It was absolutely blockbuster. So I couldn't separate the two batsmen. I really enjoyed both knocks. George Bartlett, outstanding, of course, unlucky to be on the losing side in this particular encounter. But it was still a brilliant, brilliant knock from a very, very promising batsman. And then Lewis Hill, who again, I think this season has been a Leicestershire player who's began to really step up to the mark. Him, Harry Swindles, for example, Rishi Patel as well, has been in fantastic form. So very, very impressive from those two, Joe. What did you make of those performances from Bartlett and Hill?
Yeah, like you said, two very, very different innings. Well, firstly on George Bartlett, it's great to see homegrown talent scoring 100. I think I mentioned this the other week. I don't know if it's the last podcast or the one before. Homegrown talent scoring runs.
You did. It was last week.
I can't remember who I was referencing.
Tom Wood.
That's right, yeah. Of course. Homegrown talent scoring runs at the home ground in front of home fans is brilliant. Taunton's such a great ground. Everyone knows how good Taunton is. I've never been personally, but I definitely want to go.
Oh, it's brilliant.
Such a great ground. And for me, should host more international cricket as well. Mm-hmm. Definitely. But yeah, that was great. And obviously, as you say, a bit of a measured innings from Bartlett. But Lewis Hill, I mean, he's been a revelation. For me, Leicestershire's best player this year, or certainly in the top three. Yeah, I really am a big fan of Lewis Hill. I think he's got such a good mentality when batting, and if he comes in when his side's struggling, then he's really, really measured. He kind of knows when to flip the switch almost and when to go. And yeah, this was a great inning. So for me, yeah, two excellent players, two excellent innings.
100%. And an outstanding game that I don't think any fans at the CACG will forget for a long time. It was a brilliant, brilliant game of List A cricket. And we've said that so many times this season, Joe. It really has been a good competition, of course, with all of the complications with international cricket, with the 100. The young guns for every single one of the 18 counties has stepped up at some point or the other. So a fantastic competition, a great group stage match as well. Neither side going through in the end, unfortunately. But yeah, fantastic game and two excellent knocks there from George Bartlett and Lewis Hill. In terms of my third and final batting display, Joe, I've gone with Ben Curran, which I think you're quite like. He's a very punchy, compact batsman. This was actually quite a measured innings by Ben Curran's standards, 94 from 93 balls. Usually with Ben Curran, you're looking at the 60, possibly 70 ball mark for a knock of that standard. But it was really, really good. It was an excellent knock. 9 boundaries and a 6. Really anchored the innings alongside Ricardo Vasconcelos, who scored 88. And again, the Steelbacks bounced back incredibly well against Somerset at Wantage Road after getting absolutely steamrolled by the Bears at Edgbaston. So I just wanted to mention Ben Curran because, again, him, Vasconcelos and Emilio Gay for me this season have been very, very impressive. And although the Steelbacks this season have had a very, very disappointing One-Day Cup campaign, for those who remember in the first wrap-up show, I actually put them as one of the favourites in this group to go through to the playoffs. At least there are some positives to take away from this year's campaign. And the likes of Ben Curran, the likes of Vasconcelos, the likes of Emilio Gay, for example, are definite, definite prospects for the future in a Northamptonshire shirt. So in terms of my third and final one, Ben Curran. I love that innings. It wasn't the Ben Curran that we're used to seeing. Of course, usually a lot more devastating, a lot more destructive in terms of his approach and play style. But no, I thought that was quite a nice knock. Very, very assured, very composed by Ben Curran. So here's my third and final batting display of the week in Group 1. Moving on to our bowling display, Joe. And I tell you what, this really does make my heart smile as an off-spinner, because every single one of these performances were by spinners, which I don't think has happened on any review show so far. So fair play to the three guys that I'm about to mention. And of course, there's no better place to start than a Grantham Cricket Club, where Liam Paterson-White took 5 for 19 from 10 overs. 5 for 19, absolutely extraordinary. Just to put this into context, Northants were 130 for 3. Before LPW came onto bowl, and they finished 210 all out. This was absolutely, it was remarkable. It was absolutely staggering. In terms of the stats behind this as well, so from 60 balls, he bowled 46 dot balls. 46, that's a 76.67 dot ball percentage, which is absolutely staggering. He bowled 3 maidens and conceded 1 boundary during his entire spell. As if that wasn't good enough, they're the best bowling figures by any bowler in this year's tournament, and it's the second most economic 10-over spell in the 2021 RLODC group stage behind Michael Hogan's 1-for-18 against Surrey at Sophia Gardens. Joe, what did you make of this performance? I mean, this for me, without a shadow of a doubt, is the standout bowling display of the RLODC in 2021. The amount of control they showed, the laser-like accuracy, and something that I really respected about Patterson White in this innings was the ability to change up his flights. He wasn't doing anything too, you know, outside of the box, but the way in which he approached this on what looked like a very, very good batting surface at Grantham was very, very clever, very proactive and very intelligent indeed. So what did you make of this incredible bowling display from the 23-year-old bowling all-rounder?
Yeah, I think what's most impressive is that it came at a club ground, and I don't mean that to be sad disrespectful, of course, but just county grounds are so much more better than club grounds. That's just a fact. And Patterson White, like every other bowler or most other bowlers on the county circuit, will be used to bowling at Trent Bridge in his instance, or of course, other county grounds. So the fact that he did this at a club ground for me is really, really impressive. And as you say, to only concede one boundary, it shows how well he bowled, how tight he bowled. And the fact that he bowled 10 overs as well, it's not like he just bowled, I don't know, 5 overs and took 2 wickets for 19, for example. He bowled 10 overs, took 5 for 19. It's just incredible, incredible figures. So I would have to agree and say that is the bowling performance of the tournament. Of course, there have been some other ridiculous economical ones. I should say Hogan, 1-for-18. That was ridiculously good as well. But in terms of wickets and economy, less than 2 runs an over, phenomenal from Patterson White. So yeah, 100% I would agree. Bowling performance of the tournament so far.
Could not agree more.
Group stages. I don't think that's going to get topped. Will be topped.
I don't think it will either. I'm going to be honest, he was absolutely sensational. I'll tell you what, it's been a breakthrough season for him as well. 23 years of age, had a fantastic county championship, a decent T20 blast, and then a fantastic RLODC. So Liam Patterson-White, definitely someone to watch out for. Potential England honours, maybe in the future. We'll have to wait and see, but he is a very, very bright prospect indeed at the age of 23 up at Trent Bridge. In terms of my second one, Joe, talking of bright prospects, I've got a Yorkshire leg spinner who's just 21 years of age, Josh Sullivan. 4-for-11 he took from 2 overs against Derbyshire and Chesterfield. Now, that in a 50-over game would be absolutely remarkable. But wait until I tell you the context behind this. This was a heavily rain-affected game at the Queen's Park Oval. It was just a 10 overs per side encounter. And in 2 overs, he took 4-for-11. That's a 5.5 economy rate. He was the only Yorkshire bowler to go at less than 10s. And he took 4 wickets in his second ever List A match. He took the wickets of Tom Wood, Harry Kane, Brooke Guest and Alex Hughes over the course of just 12 deliveries. This was absolutely staggering. And I'll tell you what I noticed about Josh Sullivan. I saw him in the second 11 for Yorkshire in the second 11 championship. I spoke about Liam Patterson-White and his trajectory. Josh Sullivan is a very, very flat spinner. He's someone who bowls into the deck. He doesn't really put a lot of flight on. But I'll tell you what, he's very, very effective. And so far, I think he's taken 6 wickets in his first 3 List A games. That is absolutely stunning for a 21-year-old leg spinner who's just 3 games into their entire List A career. So Josh Sullivan, really, really impressed with him. It was a fantastic bowling output. As I said, in very, very tough conditions at the Queen's Park Oval, it's not a very big ground. It is one where if you do put flights on, you can get sent completely out of the ground. So very, very impressive. 21 years of age, got plenty of time to still hone his craft and reach the peak of his powers in the world of leg spin. Josh Sullivan, take a bow. Absolutely remarkable. Great, great performance from the young leg spinner. And as a fellow spinner slash slow bowler slash pie bowler, I was very, very impressed with that indeed from the young spinner. And talking of leg spinners, Joe, my third and final one, I can't say I ever thought we'd be talking about this man when it came to standout bowling displays. But it is, of course, the Wolverhampton Warn, the Barnt Green Bunno, Lamil Cumblay, whatever you want to call him. It is, of course, Matt Lamb. 4-for-35 from 5 overs against Somerset at Edgbaston. Warwickshire won this game as well, and he went and scored 90 as well. As if that 4-for-35 wasn't enough. Matt Lamb, take a bow. For those who have seen this guy this season, he's not exactly a batting all-rounder just yet, but he has been working on his leg spin. He's been working so hard on that in the second 11, tried a bit of it in the T20 Blast as well, and of course in previous Royal London One Day Cup games. But in this game, the final game against Somerset, of course, it didn't end in Warwickshire securing a playoff place. But 4 for 35 for a guy who's basically started to really get into bowling this season, I thought was absolutely remarkable. His bowling to George Bartlett as well was absolutely stunning. It was a brilliant Yorker, absolutely pitch perfect, right on middle stump. And then he got George Thomas out with a beautiful, I say beautiful, maybe this is just the Warwickshire perspective coming into it, but it was a very, very nice leg break. It just kept low enough, clipped the off stump, and George Thomas had to walk back to the pavilion. I just couldn't believe this, Joe. What did you make of this bowling performance from Lamel Cumbly, as we call him here in the West Midlands?
Well, as you say, you weren't expecting him to be on this list at all. Similar to when I selected Nick Gubbins, I would say. I was not expecting for Nick Gubbins to pick up a 4 for this year. But I tell you what, fair play to them both. But in this instance, obviously, Matt Lamb. I've never really seen him bowl, I'll be honest. I've never really seen him bowl. So, you know, when I obviously heard about this and saw a couple of the wickets, it was a bit of a surprise. But hey, I tell you what, he's an option for Warwickshire. Now, you've been saying for a while, Warwickshire need more spinners. You've obviously got Danny Briggs, who's not here at the moment. But other than that, and Lintott, who aren't around right now. But other than that, you don't really have more options. Think of Lance, for example.
Well, we kind of do. We have Mousley. We have Bethel. Bethel's been fantastic this season
But they're youngsters right there.
Carl Carver.
Carl Carver's on loan. My point is, you don't really have many like more experienced spinners. Think of Lance have Livingston and Croft as an example, two experienced all-rounders. Mousley and Bethel don't necessarily get into your team every week just because they're quite inexperienced. Although the way they've performed, they probably deserve to at the moment.
They deserve to be, They definitely do.
So, I mean, it's great to see Lamb gives you another option. You can never have too many bowlers. You can never have too many spinners. So, as I say, it's really good to see. And similarly to Hampshire, you can take up a bowler if you needed to. You can take up a bowling spot with Nick Gubbins, in this case, Lamb for Warwickshire, and not really have to worry about losing out on a batter. You know, he's not a genuine all-rounder, but he can give you, you know, 5 overs or in a T20, 2 overs, filler overs if you need to. And it's really good. Again, similar to Luke Wells for Lance. That's what Lance have with Wells. So, yeah, it's really, really good for Warwickshire. And I think counties need to work, invest in more time in working on cricketers' secondary skills, because look at Livingston. His bowling has come on so much. 5-6 years ago, he wasn't really bowling at all. Now he's bowling for England. So, you know, he's clearly good enough now, and Lance and himself, of course, have invested time into working on that. So I think more counties definitely need to invest time into that. And, you know, if you have a number 9, you can score 50s or 30s or 40s regularly, or you have a number 3, you can bowl a bit of off spin or a bit of medium pace, then that's great. And that's what more counties need to do, as I say. So, yeah, I think it's definitely good for Warwickshire, definitely good. And as I say, you have more options now with the ball.
We do indeed, Joe. And I'll tell you what, the day that Matt Lamb takes a 5 for, I think I'll be running around the streets of Warwick with celebration. I don't know what I'd do if he ever took a 5 for. He was so close as well. He really was so close in that final innings, got so close in the 50th and final over. But I suppose we'll just have to wait and see. But either way, Matt Lamb, take a bow. Absolutely brilliant. And he's had a fantastic campaign as well for Warwickshire in 2021. In terms of moving on to our next category, Joe, Young Player of the Week, before we pass over to you, I have gone with Lewis Goldsworthy, who I've really, really rated and respected this season. Still just 20 years of age, has been an absolute star for Somerset so far, and in the last week scored 80 versus Northamptonshire, 79 against Warwickshire, and also took 2 wickets over the course of Somerset's last group stage matches. As if that wasn't impressive enough, he finished as the 6th highest run scorer in the group stages, with a total of 381 runs at 63.50 and an 87.18 strike rate. He's had a real standout / breakthrough season, I reckon, for Somerset, to be honest. 20 years of age, originally from Cornwall, of course, as many people will know, playing minor county cricket. But he's just had an excellent campaign. So I think he's 20 years of age, showing such accuracy, showing so much control with regards to his left arm off spin. I think Lewis Goldsworthy has definitely been a shining beacon for Somerset in this year's competition. And of course, the Wyverns didn't get through to the playoffs, But Lewis Goldsworthy really has been a stellar, stellar player for the West Country County in this year's competition. So Lewis Goldsworthy is my standout young player of the week in Group 1. And to be honest, he's been one of the standout young players in the entire competition so far. So definitely a worthy recipient of that award for this week here on the County Cricket Podcast. And in terms of the fourth and final category in this week's review show, we do, of course, have standout team. Now, this should be quite obvious. It is, of course, Surrey. Surrey have been absolutely outstanding. They hammered Warwickshire. They hammered Derbyshire. And as if that wasn't enough, they then went and beat Gloucestershire in yesterday's playoff. So Surrey County Cricket Club, who were missing 12 players as a result of international commitments and, of course, the 100, have made it through to the semi-final against Durham up at the Riverside. It really, really is a brilliant story for the London-based county. And I tell you what, Joe, if they went on to win this, this really would, it would be one of the, I'd say, most extraordinary RLODC campaigns that we've ever witnessed. Of course, competition came to fruition in 2014. But to think that this team have been missing the likes of Ollie Pope, I know he came in for the past couple of games, but they missed Ollie Pope, they missed Hashim Amla, Rory Burns, for example, a whole array of different bowlers, the likes of Jade Dernbach, the Currans, Gus Atkinson.
Jason Roy's not there. Laurie Evans isn't there.
Laurie's
Jordan Clark.
Exactly. They're missing so, so many players. If they manage to win the Royal London One Day Cup, and I know that people go, oh, but it's Surrey. But the fact is, Surrey really have got great strength in depth. We've seen the likes of Nico Reefer, for example, come to the forefront. Tim David found some form towards the last stages of the competition. Ryan Patel's been nothing short of exceptional. Matt Dunn, Connor McKerr, Cam Steele as well took 4 for 39 against Warwickshire. These fringe players really have stood up to the mark when Surrey needed them the most. So without a shadow of a doubt, standout team of the week in Group 1 for me, Joe, Surrey County Cricket Club, and deservingly so. I think they've been absolutely sensational. And as I said, if they can win this competition this year, that'd be nothing short of miraculous, to be honest.
Yeah, fair enough. I think that's a pretty fair assessment of Surrey. Like I said, I think they've been, well, I should say incredible, to be honest. So, yeah, I think that's fair enough. But we'll move on then to Group 2, of course, Lancs's group. And we'll start with batting. Now, I've gone with two from the same game here. So they are both from the Lancs game against Essex the other day. The tied game, which, by the way, was an incredible game. Simon Harmer, by the way, fair play. Yeah, I can't remember how many runs he hit off the last over. 22, was it? Or 21?
Yeah, 3 sixes off the final.
Yeah,
four
I remember the 3 sixes. Yeah, so not ideal for Lancs there.
What were you feeling on that day, by the way, Jay?
Oh, well, I was pretty sure we were going to get through. I didn't think that we'd concede the runs. So, yeah, it's very disappointing, to be honest. As I said, I thought we would have got through. We should have got through. We should have been the ones playing Surrey yesterday, rather than Gloucestershire, but that's how it is. We didn't ultimately, and nothing we can do now. Just move on to the T20 quarterfinal, which is in a week. That's next week, isn't it? Yeah,
T20
quarterfinal. So hopefully we can beat Somerset there, but only time will tell. But back onto my batting performances then. And my first one, I mean, both of these are cricketing legends. One maybe more so than another. But my first one, who I would consider one of my favourite players around, probably ever, and that's Stephen Croft. 93 he hit. Now, you may say there was other better innings this week. There was hundreds that I've not included, but I had to include this innings. Stephen Croft, what a stalwart. He's up there with one of the best ever county cricketers in modern years, for me. Arguably ever, but certainly in the last 20 or so years, Stephen Croft, one of the best. With the ball, I mean, he did bowl the last over, ironically, against Essex, but apart from that, with the ball, he was great as well. He's always been great with the ball. And this innings, he hits the ball so hard. I don't know if I've seen a cricketer who hits it harder than Stephen Croft. He absolutely hammers the ball. And yeah, this 93 just shows his absolute class and why he is one of the best Lancs I've ever produced, in my opinion. Great innings. Great to see Stephen Croft back in the runs. Hopefully he can find some form before the T20 and then before the championship as well. Because, yeah, I'd love to see a Stephen Croft 100 to win the county championship in the last game of the season. That'd be pretty nice. So, only time will tell again with that. But as I say, great to see Crofty getting those runs. 93 is so close to a century, agonising for him not to get the 100. But regardless, what a legend. As I say, one of my favourite cricketers, certainly county cricketers ever. Great to see. I really do think he should have played for England as well in the past. I do think he was very unlucky there. But yeah, Stephen Crofts is my first. Moving on to someone who actually has played for England and has scored a lot of runs for England, Sir Alistair Cook, in it for 2 weeks in a row. He is now in this 110 against Lancs he scored, which was, again, just, I said this last week, just a classic Sir Alistair Cook innings. And again, I don't really know what else to say about him. Everyone knows how good he is. Even if you're only a, you know, not a super fan of county cricket, you'll still know everything about Sir Alistair Cook if you're just a general fan of cricket. You know, you'll have seen him back countless times. You'll have seen him score countless runs. And this was just another one of those days. And it just felt pretty routine, to be honest. And all credit to Lancs' bowlers, because we really, really pulled it back at the end. Him and Tendulkar were really, really going well. Tendulkar had passed 50. And Cook and Tendulkar were really going well. They were cruising, looking like Essex would walk it. And yeah, Lancs, I think they needed 60 off 60 or something like that, approximately. Lancs got it down to them needing, obviously, 22 off the last. So yeah, credit to Lancs' bowlers there. We brought it back really, really well. But Sir Alistair Cook, what a player. Again, I don't really have anything else to say. I don't know if you have anything to add to that. That's 2 weeks in a row. I feel like it's a bit of a cop-out, but I genuinely don't really know what else to say about Sir Alistair Cook.
I don't think it's a cop-out, to be honest, Joe. I think it's just a celebration, really, of just how good Sir Alistair Cook is. And we said it before the tournament began, didn't we? He was going to be a standout. Massive, massive boost for Essex to have. England's all-time leading run scorer across all three formats. The man is an absolute legend of the game of cricket. And I'll tell you what, this year, hasn't he produced some incredible knocks? Not just in the Royal London One Day Cup, but of course in the County Championship as well. Alistair Cook's batting is just timeless. It never gets old. It's incredibly aesthetically pleasing. It really is magnificent. It's opulent, in fact, in terms of the way in which he goes about it. So, Joe, I don't think it's a cop-out at all. I think it is just an acknowledgement of England's finest ever cricketing sons. And of course, he deserves to be on that list. So, Joe, absolutely great choice, great batsman, and a legend of our wonderful game, to say the very least.
Without a doubt. And he has had a brilliant year, by the way, for Essex. Essex fans must be loving this. He has had such a good year in, well, the two competitions he's played. And I do wish he would play T20 cricket. I think that'd be quite a good team, play T20 cricket. I don't think he'd be bad at it at all. In fact, I think he'd be quite good at it. So, yeah, I would like to see him play. Obviously, that's for whatever reason he's not, but maybe one day, who knows. So my third and final performance then of this week was Tom Haynes, Sussex's captain, 123 against Middlesex. And this was, again, a really, really good innings. Also very satisfying that it was 1-2-3. I always like it when teams are 1-2-3 for five. I always find that quite good. But anyway, yeah, what an innings this was by Tom Haynes. Really, really good innings. And his maiden one in List A cricket. Also, Ben Brown got a ton as well, opening the batting, which is a newish role for Ben. Great to see him doing well. He's also his maiden List A ton. Obviously, we've had him on the podcast previously. I've mentioned this a few times, and he got so close a few years ago. You remember that game where Luke Wright smashed a ton? He got so close in that game, Ben Brown, against Middlesex as well at Lords. He's now done it against Middlesex for the first time ever, and it's great to see. But obviously, Tom Haynes just exceeded him in terms of runs. So I've just gone with Haynes for that reason. So yeah, really, really impressive from Tom Haynes. Good to see. It's always nice to see a player get maiden tons, of course. And to see him doing that while he's the captain as well must have just been so, so special. So Tom Haynes, 123 versus Middlesex. Yeah, I mean, do you have anything else to add to that, Aaron? Because obviously, Tom Haynes has not really been noticed much recently or over the last few years. I think he's kind of gone under the radar a little bit. So a notice isn't really the right word, but under the radar is more the right phrase there. For me, he's a great player. And as I say, great to see him getting a maiden ton for Sussex. So Joe, have anything else to add to that?
To be honest, Joe, not really. I think you've covered most of it. I just want to say again, though, Tom Haynes, what a season he's had. One of the leading run scorers in the county championship was Sussex's leading run scorer in our Red Bull competition. And then, of course, that knock, as you said, it's always very satisfying to see 1-2-3, isn't it? 123, and as you said, 1-2-3 for five. It's quite funny. But Tom Haynes, what a season, what a knock. And yeah, Joe, definitely a worthy recipient of being one of the batting displays of this week in Group 2.
Definitely. He's had a great year. And as you say, one of the leading championship run scorers, him along with a few others. If England ever consider a top order batsman, then he could be a potential there, because the top order is looking a little bit shaky at the moment for England. So yeah, we'll see about that. But anyway, back, let's not talk about the test match. Let's move on to the bowling performances then from the One Day Cup. And again, there's not really been many, like, well, there's been no fifers this week in Group 2. So all of these are fourfers, but for me, all of these are exceptional bowling performances. Firstly, Chris Rushworth, for 37 against Hampshire. It's Rushworth, isn't it? I mean, what similar to Cook, what do you need to say about me? With a white ball, I always feel like bowlers like Rushworth will be so dangerous, and I don't know why they're never used more. Darren Stevens is another one. The white ball moves so much early on, and Rushworth is an example of why he's been, of why bowlers like him and Darren Stevens are so effective with it. 4 for 37 against Hampshire. He just bowls so accurately and is so hard to hit. He's not rapid at all. He's not quick at all, but he's so hard to hit. He's so hard to get away because of how accurate he bowls it and how much movement he can get and how late he gets that movement. He's so hard to hit. And this was just another day at the office, to be honest, for Rushworth. It really, really was. So, I mean, again, Chris Rushworth, an absolute legend of the game. I still don't know how he didn't also get selected for England because, yeah, for me, he was a surefire to get selected for England in around, what, 2013, that kind of year, 2012, 2013. So, I mean, yeah, it's boggles my mind how him, you know, that kind of player didn't ever get selected for England, but that's how it is in the end. And a brilliant bit of bowling once again from Rushworth. So then on to my second bowling performance of the week, another seamer. In fact, all three of these are seamers. The second one then is Ryan Tendoskata. He took 4 for 34 against Sussex in 9.2 overs, almost 10. And similar to Rushworth, really, in terms of he's not very quick. He doesn't open a bowling, so he doesn't bowl with a new ball and get the chance to move it. But he's not very quick, Tendoskata, but regardless, still bowls in such good areas. He still bowls with really, really good line and length, very controlled. I didn't expect that, of course, with someone of his experience, similar to Rushworth. But regardless, Tendoskata is just, for me, his bowling has gone so unnoticed over the years. I really do think that. And, you know, he's got IPL contracts largely for his batting. He's got other franchise contracts largely for his batting. Even for the Netherlands when he's played international cricket, he's really been there as a batter. But for me, his bowling has just been really important, certainly for Essex over the last few years. And in T20 cricket and one-day cricket especially, to get four overs out of a bowler like Tendoskata in T20 cricket in a nighttime game when there's a bit of dew on the surface, it's just so hard to hit. And I really, really do like bowlers like that. Similar, again, Stephen Mullaney is another one who I think kind of falls into that category of just so hard to hit. He's not expressed, but he just bowls so well in such good areas. So, yeah, what do you think about Tendoskata's bowling? Because this is just another example of many here, this forfeit against Sussex. What are your thoughts on Tendoskata's bowling? Do you also think it's kind of gone unnoticed a little bit?
I wouldn't say unnoticed, Joe, to be honest, because
unnoticed, maybe that's the wrong word, but he's less appreciated for bowling than batting, I would say.
I don't know though, because his ODI record is absolutely fantastic for the Netherlands. He's taken 55 wickets at 24.12, so I'm not sure if it's gone under the radar. I just feel like in recent times, maybe he hasn't been utilised as much as he used to be. Because Tendoskata used to be almost a breakthrough specialist. He'd come on and always take a wicket. In fact, I think his strike rate's about 28 in ODI cricket. It's very, very good. So, to be honest, Tendoskata, maybe in recent years, you could say, hasn't been utilised as much as, you know, like the peak of his powers in 2012, 13 or 2014, for example. But the guy's he's an experienced campaigner. You know exactly what you're going to get with him. He's very disciplined. He's very militaristic in terms of his execution. So, no, RTD, I think, is absolutely fantastic. He's been a great servant for Essex County Cricket Club. And again, although he hasn't been utilised as much as he would have been, you know, as I mentioned, in the mid to early 2010s, he is still a very, very viable option. So, great bowling display. Needed it as well, didn't they, Essex, in that particular game? So, Ryan Tendoskata, yeah, very, very excellent performance that this week from the Dutch all-rounder.
Yeah, quality bowler. As you said, Tom Westley really knows how to use him. He's played with him for a long time. Mm-hmm. Really, really knows how to use him. So then the final bowling performance then from the group stages, this will be, of this year's wrap-up show, and that is Ian Holland, 4 for 12 against Kent. And again, another former guest on the podcast. He's had a great year with the bat, Ian Holland. He really has. In all formats, he's had a great year with the bat. With the ball, he's not taking as many wickets as I'm sure he would like, but this is just proving again why he's such a good bowler. Again, similar to Rush with Tendulkar, he doesn't bowl very quick. He doesn't bowl slow, but he doesn't bowl express. And again, I feel like I'm repeating myself here, but he just controls the ball, controls his line and length so well. And it really is great to see Ian Holland taking four for. I mean, if you've listened to the podcast, you'll know how much he loves his cricket. He was literally on a cricket game show. So you'll know how much he loves his cricket. And this, it really does, you know, make me glad to see him taking wickets. And I'm sure you'll agree with me there, Aaron, when I say that. And without a doubt, Ian Holland deserves to be in this category. And to be honest, I hope he continues to take wickets and score runs, because Hampshire have got such a good cricketer on their books there. He's performed brilliantly for them. It really is honestly great to see Ian Holland doing so well and thriving for Hampshire this year. But that pretty much brings me to the end of my bowlers then for this week. So I'll go to my young player of the week first. And that is, again, maybe I've been a bit of a cop-out here choosing him. I feel like I have to give him a mention at some point. That's George Lavelle, 52 against Essex. What a knock. Maybe there were some other youngsters who scored bigger runs or took more wickets than him. But I just think George Lavelle is such an impressive batter. And he's never really been given a chance at Lancs, because obviously we've had Dane Vilas, we still technically have Alex Davis until the end of the season, before he obviously moves to Warwickshire, which I am still gutted about. But
I have very different emotions about that.
Of course you would. Of course you would. But
can't wait to see him in a Warwickshire shirt.
Well, yeah.
You can't either, Joe, admit it. You can't wait to see Alex Davis wearing that bare and ragged stuff.
It's a shame. It's such a shame. But I guess silver linings, it does present George Lavelle with a big opportunity. And certainly with the gloves, he's really, really taken it. He's so impressive with the gloves. Some of the stumpings he got, I think he got one at Gloucester that really, really stuck in my mind. He got a brilliant fast stumping. Some of the catches he's been taking and some of the takes he's done, really, really impressive. I don't really remember him making many mistakes at all. So for me, with the gloves, George Lavelle is really, really impressive. And with the bat as well, he's not really kicked on until the Essex game, 52. He's got a couple of stars, a couple of 20s, 30s, that kind of thing. But 52 against Essex will give him such a big, big boost of confidence. And, you know, realistically, he's probably going to get, unless Davis doesn't play for Lancs again this season for whatever reason, which I don't think will happen, he's probably now going to go back and play second team cricket for the rest of the season. And that's just a chance to consolidate, get some more runs, do well, you know, get some more overs in keeping, if you like. And I think it's given him a real, real good chance to get ready for the new season, where hopefully he will be our number one keeper. Because as good as Dane Vilas is behind the stumps, I do think it's wrong that he was keeping over Davis, if I'm being honest. I don't know if Davis was injured. I know he's had a few injuries in the past, but I do think that was wrong, because Davis is a great keeper as well. So hopefully George Lavelle can be our wicketkeeper next season. Knowing Lancs, we're probably going to sign someone who we just don't need. And restrict the opportunities of young players. But yeah, I really do hope George Lavelle can kick on. I think he's a great player, and I guess only time will tell, but hopefully in 2022 he can have a great year.
100% Joe, could not agree more. In terms of just two honourable mentions as well, just for this week, I have to mention that, Joe, we will of course stay with George Lavelle, but two young Essex batsmen, Feroz Kushi and Josh Rummell, absolutely fantastic. Both scored centuries this week. Cushy in particular, I think it was up at the river. It was up at the Riverside. 109.
It was a brilliant innings. Yeah, against a good attack. Really, really
against,
good innings.
Well, one of the best attacks in the RLODC this year. So for us, Cushy for that 109, I think does deserve a mention. And as I said yesterday, Josh Rummell, maiden list A century in a quarter final, has got Essex through to today's game against Glamorgan. Outstanding. But to be honest, Joe, George Lavelle, very, very good prospects. I've liked what I've seen of him. As you said, a very enterprising, dynamic wicketkeeper batsman. And if it was up to me, Joe, I would agree. I would actually invest in him for the future at the top of the order if I was in charge of Lancs. But as you said, we'll have to wait and see what the Red Rose do in his case.
Without a doubt, yeah. It will, as I say, only time will tell. We'll be very interested to see what happens with that. And finally then, team of the week, and I think you can only really go with Durham here. I don't really think there's anyone else who you can go with. Durham are just ridiculously good at one day cricket this year, and to be honest, that's really surprised me. I didn't really have Durham up there as one of my favourites. I had the likes of Lancs up there, Surrey were potentially up there as well, Northants, as you say. I'm just talking generally here for the title, But fair play to Durham. They've done so well. They just pretty much blown every team out of the water with bat and ball. Right from Graham Clark at the top of the order to Rushworth with the ball. They've just done phenomenally well. And I think 100%, if Durham was to win this, it would be thoroughly deserved. So I don't really think you can go with anyone else for Team of the Week in this group.
No, to be honest, as you said, Joe, Durham have been absolutely sensational, considering as well, they aren't missing as many players as Warwickshire, for example, or Surrey, who we've mentioned beforehand, but they're still missing the likes of Matt Potts, for example, and of course, Ben Stokes. They are two massive, massive absentees for the Northeastern County, but the likes of Rushworth, Beddingham, Lees has been fantastic as well. Graham Clark has been the standout batsman in the entire tournament so far. So definitely, definitely the standout team, not just I think in Group 2, but in the competition as a whole. Durham really have been nothing short of exceptional so far in the 2021 Royal London One Day Cup. But Joe, before we end this week's review show, we do of course have the big question. So from 18 teams, we're now down to the final four. Essex, Glamorgan, and then we've got Durham versus Surrey tomorrow. Who do you think will be playing for the Royal London One Day Cup in Thursday's final at Trent Bridge, mate?
I am going to go for, and I just big Durham up as well.
But you're going to say Surrey, aren't you?
Surrey and Glamorgan. That's what I'm going to say.
I knew that was coming.
So I will say Surrey and Glamorgan, and I will say Surrey to win.
Ooh, that is interesting. And I'll tell you why that's interesting, Joe. Because I see it slightly differently. I see Essex versus Durham. I'm going to be honest.
We're completely opposite.
We have. But you know what? That's kind of good, isn't it? At the same time.
Yeah, definitely.
It shows
so who would you say to win out of those two?
Oh, that's a tough one, isn't it? Essex are the form team, but then Durham, they win against a very, very strong Surrey side tomorrow. I probably would say Durham are favourites. In particular, if Clark, Beddingham, for example, if their top order can fire, we've mentioned already about the quality and calibre of their bowling attack. They really have been fantastic. But as we've said throughout today's show, Joe, only time will tell. We'll have to wait and see. Thursday, Trent Bridge, bring it on.
Is it on Sky?
Yes, it is. And of course, for those who want to buy tickets as well, £10. That is all that they are. If you can get to Nottingham on Thursday, £10 tickets. Please, please do support the counties, no matter who's there in the final. I mean, if I can get some travel arranged, I will definitely be there at Trent Bridge on Thursday. But Joe, I mean, that pretty much brings us to an end to today's wrap-up show. Do you just have any final words, mate, before we end? I think we've pretty much covered everything, to be honest.
Yeah,
with regards to the Royal London One Day Cup this week.
I'll just end on the test match. Hopefully England can get the win. Hopefully their top order can bat properly this time rather than just batting a little bit dodgily at the top of the order. I mean, it was very interesting you said it with Pujara, and imagine if him and Sibley had been batting together.
They could have.
Wow. They could have done, yeah, for Warwickshire. That would have been
remarkable. The best spectacle the game had ever witnessed, in my opinion.
Would have been, but fair play to India, they're going very well at the moment. So Bumrah and Shami doing very well. So yeah, I don't know. It's gonna be an interesting one. I'd like to think England can knock these off on home turf. I'd like to think, especially with the form route and Johnny are in. Hopefully those two can bring it home if all else fails. But yeah, we'll see. Hopefully some runs for Burnsy as well.
We will see indeed, John. Of course,
And Haseeb as well.
I would echo those words as well and add Dom Sibley's name into the mix. But before we get into any debate, Joe, I say that that's where we end today's show. We don't want to have an extra hour-long extension to today's episode. But of course, to all of our wonderful listeners out there, thank you very much for tuning in, not just to this week's review show, but of course to all of our Royal London One Day Cup review shows so far in this year's tournament. Of course, we do have plenty more interviews, plenty more podcasts coming up, so do keep an eye on those. But that is it from myself and Joe for this week's episode of the County Cricket Podcast. To all of you wonderful listeners out there, thank you very much for tuning in. And as always, guys, we'll see you on the next one.